Committee of the Whole, come to order. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 45. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 45, the Tribal Commission, an act relating to game and fish, requiring the department to submit general fund a budget request for grizzly bear management program and employee health insurance costs, providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 6, Tribal Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 45, Game and Fish Department General Fund Budget Request, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. There were 8 ayes and 1 no, signed by Representative Davis and Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Davidson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with recommendation that Bill Number 45 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'll turn the explanation of both the amendment and the bill over to my good friend from House District 19.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Folks, if you'll look at Senate File 45, what it is talks about game and fish funding, and what we've been doing is mainly the game and fish have been furnishing, running their department out of their license sales. A few years ago, we started giving some general fund money, and last year we gave them $9.6 million. This year we gave them $12.2 million, and just a little bit about their funding. They did get $6 million in Pittman Robertson money. That was an unexpected thing. And they got another $1.8 million from non-resident fishing license. That was an unexpected thing. And then the governor in his budget that we looked at put $5 million in a trust fund. So there's a bunch of money there. And this bill, down on the bottom of page 1, it says grizzly bear. So what the plan is in this bill is to put about $2 million in grizzly bear management. And then if you look on the bottom of page 2, it talks about putting $4.7 million into the game and fish budget for the paying of health insurance. There are only a few agencies that the health insurance in the state is not paid by the state, and that was the genesis of this bill, trying to get them money to cover. They have been paying for their health insurance premiums for all their employees out of their money that they receive. And so the first one that came up was, well, let's put them back on an even playing field and give them the $4.7 million to cover their health insurance premiums for their employees. I will point out that because their money comes from not general funds, they're not obligated to do anything that the state does, but they usually go along with that. But that was an interesting thing. So this bill is saying that we would like to increase $4.7 million in the health fund and $2 million for the grizzly bear management. We are managing the wolves out of the general fund. The amendment that you have that our good chair moved, if you'll look at this one, in committee, we looked and said, do we want to give both the $4.7 million for the health care benefits and the $2 million just about for the grizzly bear management? Then there was some discussion by some folks that said, if we put grizzly bear management funds to manage them, that means the general funds are taking care of them, and that could muddy the water up a little bit as we move toward delisting or getting the grizzly bears delisted so we can manage them and hunt them. So that was a little bit of a concern. So the two concerns we had were we have been quite generous with the Game and Fish funding, the extra $5 million that the governor put in, and the extra money that kind of an unexpected bunch of money from Pittman Roberts and the non-resident fishing. So we made an amendment on this bill to take the grizzly bear management out and leave the health care costs in. So that's the amendment, and I'd like to have you look at the amendment and decide what you'd like to do with the amendment. So the amendment says, the recommendation from the committee was we take the $2 million for the grizzly bear management out of this bill.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on the standing committee amendment, my understanding and the way that I read the bill, and I guess correct me if I'm wrong, is that this bill doesn't actually deal with money at all. This is about reporting in the future. So the $1.9 million that has been expended in the state budget for grizzly bear management is inside of our state budget. This bill is separate from that. And if we remove the provision in the bill dealing with grizzly bear, all we're really removing is the requirement that they submit their budget for review for the next budget cycle. But my question is, if it's already part of their standard budget request for this year, won't it automatically be, I mean, that budget request is going to come up automatically. And so I just need some help from someone on the Appropriations Committee. I think they're all off the floor, so we can do whatever we want, I guess. But maybe the good representative could explain to me the budget process mechanism that was used in funding grizzly bear management during the current budget cycle.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question on the amendment, and I guess my question is why wouldn't it be backwards? Why wouldn't you leave the grizzly bear in and take the insurance out? Because I have a feeling that these people that were coming up with health insurance and stuff, these are people that operate on the enterprise side of that budget. In other words, their salaries are supported by license sales, as they should be, and part of the cost of having a employee is having their health insurance. So why wouldn't that part of the enterprise cost be allocated to the license sales or the license revenue as well? So that would be my question, and I'll just sit down.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The chairman of education has a question that I really don't know, and I wish the appropriations folks were here to say this, give us an answer. Is it already profiled and it's in there, or is it a request that they're going to make? Both of these are requests that they're going to make, and I cannot tell you if the money is already there or not. For the chairman of revenue, that was discussed. We really wanted, you know, what would be the best thing to do. The people in our committee just thought that was, in fairness, they have always paid their own just exactly as you said, but they are employees, the way it was discussed, they're employees of the state, and so the state should be paying it. So it was a philosophical debate, and the other side ruled the way you're saying, take the insurance out and leave the bear in, and our committee did just the opposite of that.
If you have heard the motion on standing committee amendment, are you ready for the question? Chairman Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say that this money hasn't been profiled. It's just a request to profile it. At least that's what I got in talking to the appropriations people.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Note that on page 2, section E, we authorize the commission to prepare a request for general funds for health insurance premium coverage. Nothing in this bill authorizes the general fund paying for health insurance premiums for Game and Fish Department, but only authorizing them to put together a request to come back to the legislature next year. And we thought this was a fair trade-off, giving them the opportunity to request the funds in exchange for continuing to manage the Grizzlies as they have been. Thank you.
Chairman Teeters.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my question goes back to the good representative, and maybe you can answer my question. Did the state spend the $5 million this year in through the budget process to pay for those premiums in this biennial budget? I understand that this deals with requests in the future, but what happened this year? And I apologize, I don't know all the moving parts of the budget by heart, especially Game and Fish.
Chairman Davidson.
I believe that that's correct. They did use the money this year, are going to, but this is just for the continuation of it because of the fact that there's so many endangered species and so many things that we've put off on them to take care of without money to go with it.
Chairman Teeters.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just follow up on that. And the way I understand our budget process is that if we funded it last year, will it not automatically be considered when we create the next biennial budget? Because that's the way our budget process works. That would be part of their standard budget request for the next biennial budget. I'm just trying to figure out if we need this bill for sure. And if that is going to be carried forward in their next standard budget request, we don't need to mandate in law that it be considered again. That's my concern.
I think
Chairman
you're right.
Davidson.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you're right. I think that it will be coming, but this is just more money for the bears.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, it was my understanding, and I'm not on the committee, but it was my understanding that this money was This would just establish that it would be profiled in the budget for the next budget. And so this is just a policy decision on how they would do this. Currently the grizzly bear money is in the budget under the auspices of $100. And then this bill originally would have brought that out into the general fund to be profiled the next time around. And this amendment just takes that back to where it is currently. So I think this bill is just designed as a policy statement that this group believes that we in the future should fund Game and Fish in this manner. Maybe the good chair of TRW could comment on that. Thank you.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. But after I heard the remarks from the representative from District 22, I'm more persuaded than ever that we need to not approve this amendment, because what that does is it takes a piece of information that we might want in a future budget to know what those grizzly bear programs cost, and it doesn't do any harm to leave it in there, because the choice of funding it or not is not embodied in this bill. It's just a matter of whether we want a report that says what the costs are, and it may be budgeted, but it doesn't obligate us to fund it. So I think we ought to defeat that amendment, but that's my opinion.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, there's two ways to look at it, and it was just said right there. We just looked at it in the committee as we have funded plenty and whether this is profiled or not, it's coming. If we pass this, it will be there. So we just were cautious in saying, let's not give the grizzly bear, but let's give the health insurance. So I guess with that, I'm ready for a question on the amendment.
Question haven't been called. All those in favor of standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate file 45, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
Standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate file 45 has failed. On the back on the bill. Representative Yagi. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While my questions are not answered, I would urge the body to pass the bill. I don't want the bill to die based on my lack of understanding or the general lack of understanding on the body. So let's figure it out on second reading and vote aye on the bill.
Representatives Wands or Dan.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Also strongly in favor of the bill. Most of you will remember last year this was a budget amendment that I brought, and at that time we had discussion and said, let us work it on it in the interim. And so they worked on it in the interim. It's now into a bill. And so I would strongly urge you to pass the bill on. Thank you.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, I stand on in support of the bill. The Game and Fish has been a great ally in my neck of the woods for ranchers and dealing with issues like bears and wolves and sage grouse. And I think that helping them get the insurance portion of this on the ticket of the general fund is a good thing, and I strongly support this bill.
Representative Freeman.
I also stand in support of the bill. It brings the Game and Fish Department in line with all the other state agencies, and we have changed the way that we finance the Game and Fish Department, and this will just make it apples to apples.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we talk about bringing this agency up to speed with the other agencies that do participate in health care costs, that's a lot of apples, folks. Under the ACA, your average family health care cost is $1,500 a month. If you pass this bill, you're going to give every Game and Fish employee on average a $1,500 a month raise. Thank you.
Seeing no further debate. Oh. Seeing no further debate. Question being called? Anyone? Question being called. All those in favor, Representative or Chairman Davidson's motion that the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 45 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those say no.
No.
Chairs in doubt. Oh. All those in favor, stand up. Do we have to do a pose? No. Okay. Okay. Oh, there's no other. Oh, I lost my spot again. Senate File 45 has passed Committee of the Whole. Now we're on to Senate File 84. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 84. Introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to domestic relations and child support, clarifying daily support obligation, clarifying notice to payor may be delivered electronically as specified, amending provisions relating to the driver's license suspension and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom referred Senate File 84, child support payment, reports back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. There were 9 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 84 do pass. It's not my bill, but the person whose it is not on the floor. So I will explain it as best as I can. So what they told us in committee was the first part of this bill, there was some confusion as to how you do abatements. This is when you've paid too much and they got a, or not abatements, when you have the kid and you're like a non-custodial, they abate what you owe. And so they just added in there that you take 12 and you divide by the number of days in a year. It was just a way of computing and to help the child support people do the computation. The second part of the bill was on page 2. There was a provision in the driver's license suspension part. So if you're not paying your child support, they can suspend your driver's license. But it said if you had not made a child support payment. Well, some people, what they were doing, like your child support payment might be, you know, $300 a month. They would come in and pay $5. And they would say, well, I've met the obligation. I paid a payment. Well, and so what the good senator down the hall wanted to say was full monthly child support payment. So he stuck in the words full monthly. And then lastly, he was putting in at the very end that when they send out notices, if you've consented to receive notice by electronic means, that they could do it that way rather than mailing it to you. But you would have to agree as the payor. You'd have to sign something like, yeah, you can communicate with me electronically. What they do is after you pay your child support, they send you a receipt, and it would just cut down on costs if they could just electronically send you that receipt if you agree to it. That was it. It wasn't a real earth-shattering bill.
Well, seeing no further debate, question being called, all those in favor of Keith Gingrey's motion, and when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 84 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Senate File 84 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 13. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 13 from the Education Committee, an act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program, authorizing use of scholarship awards for enrollment in limited summer school and between term courses as specified, modifying provisions accordingly, imposing duties upon the Department of Education, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom is referred Senate File 13 engrossed, Hathaway Scholarship Program-Enrollment Expansion, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 9 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 13 do pass, and the good gentleman from House District 49 will explain the bill.
Representative Pieperinen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring to you a bill sponsored by the Joint Education Interim Committee entitled Hathaway Scholarship Program Enrollment Expansion. This act expands financial assistance for summer and winter break courses. Students are eligible to have their Hathaway scholarship provide up to 6 credit hours during a summer or winter session. Before, students could not utilize the Hathaway funds during the interim terms. The way the additional session impacts the scholarship amount is it counts against the total amount of money you can receive, but it doesn't chip into those 8 total semesters you're eligible to use the Hathaway for. The bill can also encourage students to complete their coursework earlier and keep their debt down. College students now can take summer classes such as study abroad and intensive lab courses. However, students can't use their Hathaway scholarships to pay for these classes. This bill allows for a prorated Hathaway scholarship. It allows for use during the summer and winter sessions. On behalf of the House Education Committee, I ask for your favorable consideration of Senate File 13.
Seeing no further debate and question being called, all those favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole do rise and report with the recommendation that Senate File 13 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Senate File 13 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 55. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 55 in the Education Committee, an act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program, increasing scholarship awards as specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 4, to whom was referred Senate File 55 engrossed, Hathaway Student Scholarship Program award increase, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. There were 9 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You have heard a reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 55 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. The good representative from House District 47 will explain the amendment and the bill.
Representative Paxton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The purpose of this bill is to increase the scholarship award, the Hathaway Scholarship, the opportunity, performance, and honor scholarships. I have to note that there has not been an increase in the Hathaway Scholarship since its inception 7 years ago. The bill as presented today specifies a 5% raise. Our amendment returns that to the 10% raise that was originally proposed. I realize there's a concern by some legislators that an increase in the Hathaway Scholarship will trigger an increase in tuition. And I don't have any information from the community colleges, but I think it's important to note that in the 6 years prior to the implementation of the Hathaway Scholarship, our four-year institution tuition increased by 25%. In the 7 years since the implementation of the Hathaway Scholarship, the tuition has increased 25%, which would indicate that the Hathaway has little impact on the tuition increases. I'd also like to point out that there has not been an increase, since there has not been an increase in the Hathaway since it was adopted, that it has a shrinking percentage of the payment that's made to our students. According to the data that I was able to get on the Opportunity Scholarship, the percentages dropped from 46% of tuition and dues to 36% in the 7 years since it started. The Performance Scholarship has dropped from 68% of tuition and dues to 54%. In the Honor Scholarship, it's dropped from 91% to 73%. So I think it's time that we bump this back up. So would encourage your support.
Representative Simmet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Being the unorganized person I seem to be at my desk, I can't seem to find the information I was looking for, but I can remember some of it. I know this Hathaway program, this scholarship program, is very popular, so I'm not here to tell you that, you know, that I particularly oppose or do I oppose this bill. But, you know, if you look at the graduation rate when you look at the cohorts after this program was started throughout, you know, the last 6 years, it's not very good. After 2 years, that percentage is about 13%. And it isn't until you get up into the fifth or sixth year that that percentage gets to be about 50% of the people who are on a scholarship graduate. So, you know, before we consider, you know, an increase, we might want to consider how we can increase the effectiveness and efficiency of investment that we make in this program, so we can have more people who are on the program graduate. So that's, I wish I could have found that, but those percentages are very, very low, and I think we need to concentrate on that before we think about an increase.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just looking at the fiscal note on the original bill, which if we did the amendment, this fiscal note would be appropriate. And if I'm looking at this right, we've got our expenditures in the $20,000 range, and we take them out for fiscal year 15, 16, 17. And then we go down a paragraph, and it says that the endowment has averaged around $23 million, and I assume that's per year. And then it comes down to the state treasurer's office is only anticipating income in this $12 million per year. So I'm reading that and trying to read between the lines. My question is this increase going to cause that endowment to shrink and disappear so we'll be back much like we've done with our retirement accounts and trying to find ways to replenish it? Or will this increase be such that we that the endowment will still be self-sustaining? We won't be back here scrambling around trying to fund it.
Chairman Teeters.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I can assure you that we took testimony during the interim to study the fiduciary aspects of what the fund can handle and the amount of income that the fund generates versus the amount of money that we spend. And we have consistently been putting excess reserves back into the account. So it was our analysis that the fund could more than handle the 10%, and that was why I recommended that we move up to with the 10%.
Madam Minority Caucus Chair.
Chairman, and just to be more specific regarding the money, because we did ask that question in the committee that I'm pulling it up right now. Oh. That the corpus started with $400 million. We added 50 to that for 450. It went down a little bit maybe 5 or 8 years ago, but now, right now, that corpus is up to $556 million. It is very, very healthy. And so we are confident that the increase is reasonable and honestly makes a lot of sense. In relation to the other question from the good chair of Ag, we also did receive that information, and I can hand it out for you if you'd like it tomorrow, on the graduation rates of students with the different levels of the Hathaway scholarship. And he's right. Over the years, you know, those graduation rates weren't probably, let me think, back in 2006 where we wanted them to be, with 41%, 39%, and 21% graduating in 4 years. But you know what, folks? Since we have instituted the Hathaway Success Curriculum, those graduation rates have skyrocketed. Students starting in fall of 2010, the fall-to-fall retention rate is now up to 88% for honors, 75% for performance, and 56% for opportunities. Those have been concerns and questions in the past. They're ones that we've been addressing and addressing successfully, and I'd urge you to vote aye on this bill.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concern is that these scholarships aren't really weighted, that when you tie an financial incentive to a grade point average, what we've also seen is a decrease in the number of children that are in the IB program, taking AP classes, pushing their opportunity to get a higher grade point average so they can qualify for a higher financial incentive into the scholarship program. So maybe by actually raising it, you may be adding to that problem.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it was not the intention of the committee to go into the guts of what makes people eligible for Hathaway. We were really looking at the fiduciary aspects of whether or not the fund could handle an increase in relation to the amount of inflation that we've experienced over the course of the last 7 years. The previous comments are legitimate, and I sympathize with people that are taking harder courses and receiving lower grades. And really, that discussion should be had within the context of who's eligible for which scholarship. The previous comment from the good chairman of Ag, and I always appreciate his comments, you know, we're all concerned about the graduation rates at the university. We want to keep our one land-grant university rigorous, and we want to make sure that those degrees are well cross-checked with what our other institutions that are comparable are issuing. And the graduation rates are what they are, but I will say that our Hathaway scholars are performing at a higher rate than the average people that are entering the university.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, I stand on in support of this amendment and this bill. We took a measured approach at this. It's obvious that these costs have increased, and we just want to ensure that we make a little bump to help level out some of those increased costs for students. And yes, there are issues with graduation rates and that, but let's not forget there's really good students that are graduating that are using this money, and it's been a great program, and I hope we can just do this little bump. Thanks.
Seeing no further discussion, you have heard the motion of the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Standing committee amendment number one to House Bill or Senate File 55 has passed committee of the whole. Back onto the bill. Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the committee of the whole do rise and report with the recommendation that Senate File 55 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
Senate File 55 has passed committee of the whole. On to the next bill for our consideration is Senate File 92. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 92 from Senator Coe, an act relating to education, requiring the director of the Wyoming Community College Commission to serve on the University of Illinois Board of Trustees and the State Board of Education in an ex officio capacity and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom is referred Senate File 92, the WCCC Director ex officio memberships-2 respectfully reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 9 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 92 do pass. There are no amendments, and the gentleman from House District 29 will take the bill.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I draw your attention to the purpose of this bill is to take the Community College Commission and put the director of the Community College Commission as an ex officio member on both the State Board of Education as well as the University of Wyoming. The thought behind the bill and the purpose of the bill is to respect what is happening in elementary secondary education, community colleges, and the University of Wyoming. Is becoming a greater and greater understanding and bond between them with the concurrent, joint and concurrent enrollments of many of the schools, elementary secondary schools, and community colleges plus the University of Wyoming. So the thought was that with that developing of that communication would be enhanced by having the director of the Community College Commission be a non-official the non-voting member on both of those two boards, State Board of Education and University of Wyoming. If you want, I can go through the details, but I think hopefully the explanation is complete and the purpose is understood. With that, I move its adoption and passion.
Let's see, no further debate. Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 92 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Senate File 92 has passed Committee of the Whole. On to our next bill for consideration is Senate File 6. The reading bill, reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 6 from the Agricultural Committee, an act relating to water, specifying how certain water right hearings before the state engineer and the Board of Control shall proceed, providing for allocation of costs of hearings, specifying that certain decisions may be subject to additional review by the Board of Control, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 6, engrossed groundwater contested cases, respectfully reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 9 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Simlick, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Simlick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with recommendation that Senate File 6 do pass, and I'll turn the explanation over to the Senate File to our colleague from House District 27.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill pertains to brucellosis, and I'll explain the program a little bit, the program that's in.
Mr. Chairman, I'm the good representative from House District 27, and if I and I don't know who that imposter is, but
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to Senate File 6, what we have here is a cleanup and a little bit of a clarification on the procedure regarding contested cases. Now, this is a very limited situation within this part of the statute. And what we're dealing with are petitions to amend an existing water right or an application to appropriate groundwater in what is a controlled area. And as my understanding is, only about 3% of the state are in these designated control areas, and they're in the southeast portion of the state. What we had in the statute before was this language that allowed for two hearings, quite frankly. One in front of the advisory board and the state engineer, and then another one in front of the Board of Control. What we've done with this statute is come in and said that we will have the first contested matter, if a petition is filed for an application and there's an objection, it'll go in front of an evidentiary hearing in front of the state engineer and the advisory board for that designated area. And then once that rule is had, then that'll move up for what would be a records review. And the Senate did amend in any additional evidence would be put in that. So I had to go in front of the Board of Control as an element of review. Of course, your rights to contest that to the district court still remain in place. Additionally, if an application is made and there is no objection, the state engineer has the right to still, for public interest purposes, to publish this and hold a public hearing for in the best interest of the public overall. Again, those findings can then be brought up in front of the Board of Control. The Section E that's in there still allows the Board of Control to retain what I would call as its original jurisdiction. So we're taking that requirement of basically two contested cases and going down to one, then on up to a review. That's what we're doing with this. So,
Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to ask the good bringer of the bill. It says that the state engineer, for good cause, may impose a cost on the hearing proportionally. Is that for every hearing that comes along, or just could you explain that quickly for me?
Mr. Chairman, I can. And again, this section deals with those designated control areas. Okay? So it doesn't affect you. But, no, it was a very good question. And what we have are, and there's also a provision in here that if a protest is filed and found to be frivolous, city engineer has ability to find that and dismiss that. That's already been in statute. This component here is that the state engineer, for good cause, a frivolous objection, can, for good cause, impose those costs on down to the applicant or petitioner and or the objectioner. Yes.
Well, seeing no further debate, question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Simlick's motion that Senate File, when the committee of the whole rises that Senate File 6 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Senate File 6 has passed. Committee of the whole, majority for Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, after Senate File 7, please insert Senate File 34. So to read Senate File 6, Senate File 7, Senate File 34, Senate File 42, and so forth. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Crone.
Mr. Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor?
Proceed. Yes.
Thank you. It is a very special day, members of the House. In 1846, Buffalo Bill Cody was born. This is his 168th birthday. And to celebrate that, there's some great people from Cody down today. from the Buffalo Bills Center of the West. I'd like you to join me in welcoming Director Bruce Eldridge, Kelly Jensen, Megan Smith, Rebecca Taggart, Gretchen Henrich, and Tom Roberson from the Buffalo Bills Center of the West. And let's give them a big House of Representatives welcome.
Welcome to the House. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 7. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 7 from the Agricultural Committee, an act relating to livestock, providing for brucellosis surveillance in an area of concern as designated by the Livestock Board, modifying the compensation provision accordingly and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 7, engrossed brucellosis surveillance, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 9 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Simlack.
Chair. You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Simlack?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 7 do pass, and I'll turn the explanation over to a good representative from House District 10 who is very eager to discuss this bill with you.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, and I'll try not to embarrass myself so much this time. That's what happens when you see your chairman going for the mic and you're scrambling for your notes and you're not paying attention. Brucellosis. We have an area in the state that for several years, 10 or 12 years, has been it's called a DSA, designated surveillance area for brucellosis. What we have going on is brucellosis exists in wildlife, primarily buffalo and elk being the harder to manage of the two deals. We've got livestock commingling with them. We have gone into a planned management process between producers and the state vet, and this program is necessary to maintain the brucellosis-free status. The status is crucial to the beef industry. Without it, it makes it difficult to sell livestock outside of the state. When we began the process of this management, the goal was to eradicate brucellosis, and what we found out is we won't do it. It's because while it's in the elk herds, it's something we have to live with. But the management programs that are in place have been very successful, and so we manage the risk of exposure in our livestock business. Presently, the Livestock Board can expand the designated surveillance area, but they don't have the ability to expand the area of concern, and that's what this bill does. It allows them to broaden an area where there is some concern. Well, we had a couple of elk that were harvested on the east side of the surveillance area of the mountains, and I think Sheridan and Bighorn counties. And so this would allow the board to, without broadening the surveillance area, just have an area of concern, go in and use existing money and that's in the program to do some more testing and set up some management for this area. They have done some testing on the cow herd in this area of concern about 4,000 head, and they found nothing, no problems, which is really good. But what I'll say, and you know, with the management schemes that have been in place for 2 years, we haven't had an infected herd. So it is important having an area of concern. Going to management in an area of concern would just be ahead of the game, and could prevent the expansion of the surveillance area. So I'd stand for questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman's Simlick's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 7 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Senate File 7 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 34. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 34 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to involuntary hospitalization, clarifying provisions relating to representation of the state in emergency detention hearings, and providing for an effective date. Your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 34, involuntary hospitalization emergency hearings, respectfully reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 9 ayes, no zeros, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 34 do pass. So what this bill does, there was a bigger Title 25 bill. It was like 40 pages. That died. This was sort of the backup bill because this was the one thing that had to get passed to fix for some of the counties, and it was the non-controversial part. And all it does is there are two different hearings when you're doing an involuntary commitment of the mentally ill. One is called the 109 hearing, which is your emergency detention hearing, and one is your 110 hearing, your involuntary commitment hearing. In the 110 hearing, it clearly delineates that it's the county attorney filing everything. Throughout the statute, it references the county attorney over and over. For whatever reason, when you read the 109, the county attorney's name is left out. There was a case that came out of the Supreme Court last year, In re Arby, which the court wasn't ruling on that aspect. They just pointed out that anomaly. They said it's a little odd that that's there. Most of the county attorneys continued to practice the way they normally do. We had a few counties that said, well, it is a little odd. We're not sure we have the authority. So then there was sort of this black hole. Nobody knew who had the authority to file the paperwork. It's just who gets the paperwork into the court. And so this clarifies it. And all it does on the first page, it says, when a person is detained in emergency detention and an application for involuntary hospitalization is filed, and then we've added by the county attorney. So it clarifies that it's the county attorney walking upstairs to the clerk's office and turning that in. And then on the second page, this was mostly for Natrona County. What happens in the middle of the state, because they have a facility, a lot of the counties that are around that, around Natrona, they bring their people to Natrona, and the county attorney for that county actually does their cases for them. He actually has deals worked out with those counties, and they end up paying that county some money for him doing their hearings for them. But it just made that clear, and what we stuck in was the county attorney of the county where the application is filed shall appear on behalf of the state at the hearing. So that they were two small changes, but very important changes to clarify the emergency detention hearings.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 34 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Senate File 34 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 42. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 42 from Senator Geis. An act relating to electrical licensing, exempting from licensure persons making routine replacement of light bulbs or lamps as specified, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 42 engrossed, electrical licensing, installation of light bulbs, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 9 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Simlick, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Simlick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that the Senate File Number 42 do pass, and I'll turn the explanation of Senate File over to our good colleague from House District 28.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the privilege this morning, or this afternoon, of asking a question in all sincerity, and the question is, how many legislators does it take to screw in a light bulb? And the answer isn't five, one to hold the bulb and four to turn the legs of a ladder. Apparently, it's all of us because of an error in the code that inadvertently prohibits anyone but an electrician from changing a light bulb in a state facility. So today, on behalf of facility engineers everywhere, I ask you to keep them from being led away in handcuffs every time they go to change a light bulb. And there's a scenario I foresee, and that is where an industrious individual working late at night has a light bulb go out in the mop closet. And so turning around, they step into the mop bucket and suddenly find themselves flying through a plate glass front door of one of our facilities and then flying across the street into an oncoming truck where their belt catches onto the bumper and suddenly turn the corner, they're flung directly into the first motorcycle in front of a local biker bar. And then, of course, the first bike hits the second bike and so on until 30 bikes lie on their side. And all of this to say, friends, please save our facility engineers from brutal biker beatings by allowing them to change the light bulb in the first place. And seriously, all we need to do, and you can see it in this bill, is just strike the word lamp from the code, and we're going to fix the problem. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Reeder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the first question was, how many legislators does it take to change a light bulb? I think I'm the only licensed electrician that can, so one.
Whoa. Seeing no further debate, question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Simlek's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report to do so with the recommendation of Senate File 42 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Senate File 42 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 56. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 56, presented by Senator Geis, an act relating to the state engineer, authorizing the state engineer to increase the deposit of certain fees for wells and groundwater developments into the water well contractor's account as specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 56, State Engineer Fees, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 8 aye votes, 1 nay vote, signed by Representative Simlek, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Simlek?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 56 do pass. I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to our good colleague from House District 43.
Representative Zwanitz or Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 56 increases the fees from $25 to $50 for the Water Well Driller Permit Board. Basically what happened, ladies and gentlemen, in the interim we discussed this topic. The state engineer had an AWEC position. Our appropriations committee and the governor, as of now, while conference committee is meeting, still has the position as being moved to a full-time employee and no longer an AWEC. Because we've made this move, the board needs an increase in fees, not actually an increase, a diversion in fees to pay for the full-time benefits associated with this employee. Currently, the fee they pay is $50. $25 goes to the board. $25 goes into the general fund. So this doesn't actually hurt the industry. What it does is basically take the $25 per person, which would go to the general fund otherwise. We talked about an interim committee. There's a thought about making an interim committee bill. However, we didn't know what appropriations would do, and so we felt it best to hold off until the session. Be happy to answer any questions.
Seeing no further debate. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Simlek's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 56 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
Senate File 56 has passed committee of the whole.
Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 64. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 64 from Labor Committee, an act relating to public health, providing for the division of responsibilities and financial obligations between the state and local governments, providing options for the management of public health nursing responsibilities at the county and other local levels, giving options to county commissioners to choose how to work with the state in organizing public health nursing and related public health functions, providing for a task force, providing for reports, providing for a sunset date, providing an appropriation, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 64, Public Health Nursing, respectfully reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. There were 9 ayes, 0 noes, and it was further reviewed by your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 64. They will report back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 6 ayes, 1 no, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, wonderful Chairman Harvey?
Oh.
Whoa.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 64 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I turn the explanation of the bill and the amendment over to the wonderful legislator from Laramie County.
Wonderful Representative Sue Wilson.
Oh, sorry. Thank you, wonderful Mr. Chairman. Friends, the public health program in Wyoming is a wonderful program, which you don't usually notice unless there's a plague or something. So I'll explain it first briefly. There's a collection of statutorily required programs like disaster response, environmental health, vaccinations, maternal child health, determination of nursing home eligibility. It's a kind of an odds and ends sort of thing. It's usually a joint project between the state and the counties, but unfortunately, up until now, we've had a one-size-fits-all arrangement, and trying to get all of those programs to work in both large counties and small counties by the same process. So this bill is what I think is a very successful product of a year-long wrestling bout, it really was, between the department and representatives from the counties to come up with a better way to meet individual counties' needs. And, you know, we've been trying to increase local control all session long, and this bill really does that by developing a structure for a memoranda of understanding between the counties and the department, and then we let them work out the details as best suit the needs of the communities. So I will start at the beginning, and when we get to the Standing Committee Amendment place, I'll present that. If you look at page 1, just the brief summary, division of responsibilities and financial obligations, those responsibilities and financial obligations were already there. We're not changing that. We're just saying this is how you can lay out what's happening for whom and providing options. The main options part come as you turn to page 2. Page 2, line 5, and we're going to see a whole series of places where we're providing a list of information that needs to be in the memoranda of understanding between the several counties and between the department. Little Romanet I, the department will have the authority to terminate or renegotiate the memoranda. In other words, if we come up and stick our fingers all over public health next year, then they can work it out again. Romanet 2, the county commissioners may choose for all or a portion of their county, and we phrase it that way because in some of the larger counties, because of transportation routes, that sort of thing, it's simpler to maybe divide it into two or go in with a part of another county. We're leaving that, again, up to them. And most of these things are sort of in place. Page 3, Romanet 3, the memorandum of understanding may specify how the state and local employees will be supervised and disciplined. This has been an area of contention because right now the state provides the nurses. The counties provide most of the other staff. And it was a real challenge because we had state employees supervising county employees. We had state commissioners legally responsible for we had county commissioners responsible for state employees whom they couldn't discipline or correct. It was a challenge for them. And so this enables them to just sit down and clearly state, okay, this is who we have, this is what the lines of authority are, this is how they will be supervised, and so on. Line 5 may specify the hours. And again, you think, why do we need this in here? But a lot of the counties, they don't have necessarily the same holidays that the states do. They may have different hours. And it's been a challenge across the state. Sometimes you had the county employees wanted to have certain days off, but the state employees didn't have it off, and they wanted to have the office open so people could come in or closed. And there's been a lot of lots of robust discussion, as we say here. Line 12 may specify which resources will be furnished by the state and which by the county. The breakout is 65% of the funds from the state and 35% from the county. But it works out differently for different counties. Some counties want to provide the building. Other counties want to provide the supplies and certain staff. So there's just a lot of options in all the counties, and it's going to be much better if they can say, okay, we need to address this in the memorandum of understanding, but we don't have to try to have the small county and the big county have it be the same way. Bottom of page 3, the MOU may provide, at the request of the commissioners, that county employees may be transferred to state at-will contract positions, provided that the number of positions doesn't exceed the largest number that they had before. We did clarify this with the department in committee, and they're looking at maybe 4 across the whole state, so it's not a big number. The top of page 4, after December 31st, 2013, is where the standing committee amendment is, and I'll briefly explain that, actually, and ask for a vote on that at this time so we keep going. So if you look at your standing committee amendment, we are going to insert that any of the, remember there's only about 4, state at-will employee contract positions shall be eligible for leave, the state insurance, the state retirement, and that sort of thing. Currently, some counties in the state, the employees are on the state retirement system already. In other counties, they are not. And there was a concern that if we took current county employees and then moved them over to work for the state to simplify the lines of authority, that these folks would now lose their insurance and their retirement benefits. So this was inserted there. So if I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to actually call for the question on the standing committee amendment at this time, if I can.
Yeah, I've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. State Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 64 has passed Committee of the Whole. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Continuing down on line 10 of page 4, if the commissioners of 2 or more counties desire to form a joint powers board to manage all or various parts, again, when you have small counties, it may not be necessary to have a separate administrative center in each of the 2. You may want to combine in some ways, or the western part of one county with the eastern part of another or something. Again, we are offering the local communities as many options for what works best in their situation. And then we have what reminds, on line 18, what reminds me of the good old elastic clause in the federal constitution, may contain any other provisions useful. Bottom of page 4, and turning to the top, it does point out that any county which is not currently receiving state public health nursing assistance may enter into a contract. Now, this is a particular situation, well, 3 particular situations. One county in Wyoming has never participated in the state program. They do it themselves, and they are not interested in participating with the state program. They comply with all the statutory requirements, but they do it themselves. That's fine. There are 2 other counties that several years ago, owing to some personnel issues, pulled out, and some while after they pulled out of the state system, they said, oops, and they want back in, which explains the fiscal note. The fiscal note says that we are appropriating $500,000. That's $250,000 for fiscal year 15 and $250,000 for 2016 because of the time it would take to get the contracts going. This is much less than what the state was paying for those two counties before, and that was, again, brought up in committee. Well, are they going to be able to provide what they need to provide with the lesser amount? And it was pointed out that, well, for the last couple of years they've had zero because of their previous action, and so we're giving them some, and we'll make do. That's just the budget situation as it is. Okay, so back to page 5. Lays out really the three options. Line 15, an enhanced version of the current partnership, which is really a team, the two sides doing kind of parallel amounts. Romanette 2, the state would administer with the county contributing money, and then option 3, the county would administer with the state contributing money. That seems to cover all the options, although on the bottom of page 6 we point out that they could, if they come up with yet a fourth option, that could be considered as well. Page 6, basically, section 2, we are respectfully requesting the Commissioners Association to organize a task force with the various stakeholders to continue discussion on this and come back to us. You see we have a sunset of 2016, so that we can just make sure that they, after going through the process, and a lot of the counties said that they actually have started with this already and it's working so much better than it was, they're really just happy. So we want to give them a couple years of happiness and then report their happiness to us, and we'll firm anything up that needs more firming. And that looks to me like that's really it, other than the usual verbiage, but those are the points. So I will stand for any questions.
Seeing no, Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just need to declare conflict on this bill.
Representative Gingrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems as though the bill is really good and that you've resolved a lot of these issues. I know that these have been ongoing issues for quite a few years. Why the sunset? Why you have such a good idea here? Why do we have to revisit this in 2016? Why wouldn't we just leave it in place? I'm not really understanding why we're setting up a task force of the County Commissioners Association to review it. I guess that was my main thing. And then my other question was, over where you can transfer your employees. So if you have if you're one of the counties, my county does this. We have state public health nurses, but we have about 4 county health nurses. And they all work together in the same office, but they all have different benefits. The 6 state health nurses work under state policies, and the 4 county ones work under county policies. And what's funny is they all want to be county ones because we have better benefits than the state. But if the county wanted to transfer, it says here the department may accept, this is over on page 4, line 1, the department may accept county funds to defray the cost of transferring. If I'm transferring it, and it looks like it's permissive, like I just get to do it, why would I give you money to do it? I'm just going to hand them all off to you, off to the state, and say, here, state, you take them. Why would the county contribute any money? I guess it was, so 2 questions. That one, and then why the sunset?
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the sunset was just to light a little fire to make sure that we didn't forget about them in 2 years and make sure that anything that needed tidying was tidied. As far as why would they send money if they didn't have to, they do have that 35% contribution that they come up with, so they don't get to get away with nothing.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And further on that issue, what we noticed was that all different counties, or not all, but quite a few counties had different MOUs. And some counties had county attorneys that crafted great MOUs, and they got a sweetheart deal. But there are counties that wound up with county employees that they could not hire, they could not fire, they did not supervise, and yet they paid their wages and paid their benefits. and accepted full liability for all of their actions while they were in the office. And some of the counties have said, oh, we don't like that contract. In fact, we want out of the public health nursing business altogether. We don't want any county employees in this situation. We do not want to accept any liability in this situation because we're the ones, I mean, it says county public health office. So who gets the call when there are complaints? It's the commissioners. And yet there's nothing they can do about an employee that may be less than polite to the public or incompetent in record-keeping or whatever. They're accepting the liability but not being able to direct any of the efforts because they're managed by a state employee. So now they're getting completely out of the health nurse business, but they are willing to put money in. What they're saying is, talk about roads, we can talk about roads forever. Talk about nursing, we don't have the expertise. So we'll just give you the money and you do the job and you hire him, you fire him, you supervise him, you take the liability. And you know, to me, the beauty of this bill, unlike the federal government who says one size fits all, is that this bill gives flexibility. It gives flexibility to counties who don't have the expertise and don't want the liability and don't want the obligation. They're still willing to provide the office space. They're still willing to provide the 35% maintenance. They just don't want to deal with it. And I think that that's probably best in the public interest. So then we've got counties, and I could name you two, that are kind of divided geographically, one by a desert, one by a mountain. And so it kind of makes sense that if one part of a county wants to join in with another county where perhaps the community is closer to the population of that part of the county that they're closer to. So it doesn't have to be a whole county. You can take a part of a county and put here and a part of a county and put there. The whole point of the bill is the county commissioners and the Department of Health and the public health nurses all sat down together and they said, this is what works for us. This is what works for us. This is what works for us. And so they came up with three plans that work. This bill is the testing ground. All right. Does it work? How long does it work? Does it work forever? We're going through an election cycle. Will it still work? What we continue to hear from the County Commissioners Association, what we continue to hear from the organization that manages the county commissioners is that they're pleased with this. They like the flexibility. They like the opportunity. They like that not all counties are the same and they don't have to all go under the same contract. So it's a liability issue with some. With others, it's a lack of expertise. So we just gave them all the ability to try out different MOUs, and that is the point of the sunset date. Is at the end of the day, is it just too confusing with the Department of Health? Is it too much work? Is it for the interest of the public health? So that's the point of, I think the other question addressed was the giving the at-will employees, because counties who give up their employees, who won't hire and fire anymore, they now become state employees. But we took away those positions. So they will become AWAC positions. And unless it is specifically named in law, we cannot give them any benefits. So you may have a secretary that's worked for a county for 25 years and now is suddenly a state employee and no longer contributing to her retirement and no longer having the ability to get insurance. So this gives us the opportunity to put them under the state retirement plan for the time that they are state employees. It may be 2 years. It may be ever after. And it also gives them the opportunity to have some health insurance so that they, I mean, you've got good, loyal employees, and we don't want to hang them out to dry.
Chairman Gingrey.
I guess just two more questions. On the 35%, I always understood that was not in statute. That was just sort of a policy decision. I'm wondering if you want that in the bill to say the 35, because, I mean, from my county's point of view, in my real job, I'm the guy that negotiates this, and I think we must have gotten a sweetheart deal because we're not paying that. If we're trying to make this more consistent, maybe we need to put it in the statute that each county needs to contribute 35%. And then my other issue, and it's not really a question, I just wanted to point it out, you're allowing them to cross over county lines. There's another statute that this might complicate. So you have your county health officer, and the county health officer issues orders that apply to the entire jurisdiction of the county, and the statute's very clear that the county health officer has full jurisdiction within the county boundaries. So let's say the county health officer issues a quarantine order of some type, dealing with rabies or something like that. You're going to have this conflict if you got your one public health office is in one county and another county, and then you got county health officers sort of overlapping. Just a small piece, and maybe that's why the sunset, so that can get worked out. But I think at some point we need to come back and make the two jive up. I would also point out that many counties have moved to districts, and they don't do the county anymore. They actually have districts. And then they have a board of health that operates everything. And how that all plays together, maybe that's something why you did the sunset. So maybe those three things could all be discussed, how they're all going to interact with each other. So maybe I have talked myself into the sunset was actually maybe a good idea.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not an attorney, but I think I should caution the previous speaker that he is not obliged regarding his budget to incriminate himself. regarding the districts, on page 2, line 21, it does indicate that the county commissioners may choose any existing organization which currently delivers any or all public health services. So I think that would cover the public health district, I would assume. And my thought, not being involved in the negotiation, but would be that the question regarding county health officers, that on page 4 where we indicate that the MOU may contain any other provisions useful, I think if there were a situation where they were crossing county boundaries, that presumably they could negotiate the arrangement of the orders and that sort of thing under that category.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I just one little other caveat, and that is why there are some things that we intentionally left vague is so that we could allow for negotiations during this trial period. So if it didn't work the first year, maybe they can come back and renegotiate so that we can really figure out what works, because what we've got today is a theory, and what we want in the end is something that works in practice.
Seeing no further debate, question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 64 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Senate File 64 is passed Committee of the Whole. Majority, Floor Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, Major overhaul of the general file list, so get your pen and pencil ready. At the bottom, after Senate File 76, add these bills. 66, 93, 48, 58, 59, 53, 83, 67, and 68. Then take Senate File 63 up above and move it down below Senate File 68. and then take Senate File 28 up above and move it down below Senate File 63. So the order from here forward will be 81, 82, 21, 57, 74, 76, 66, 93, 48, 58, 59, 53, 83, 67, 68, 63, 28. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. The next bill for our consideration will be Senate File 81. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 81 from Senator Christensen, an act relating to labor and employment, prohibiting an employer from requesting or requiring access to a social media account of an employee or prospective employee, providing a definition, providing exceptions, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 81, Employer Access to Social Media Accounts, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. There were 8 ayes, 1 no, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman? Wonderful Chairman Harvey.
Well, thank you, wonderful Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 81 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I will turn the explanation over that to the beautiful representative from District 16.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking for the amendment. I'm sorry, I was unprepared for that. Oh, okay. So to dispense with the amendment quickly, it was just a language issue on the bottom of page 2. It was discussing requesting an employee or prospective employee, but really that section only applied to employees. So it was removing prospective employees from that. So if there aren't any questions, I'll call for the question on the amendment.
Yeah, I've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 81 has passed Committee of the Whole. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this is a privacy bill, and the bill is prohibiting an employer from requiring access to a social media account of an employee or a prospective employee. And I will admit, when the bill was first brought to me, I thought, is this a problem looking for a or is this a solution looking for a problem? But it turns out after some research, this actually is an issue for a lot of companies, a lot of employees, and a lot of states. 12 states currently have put something into their statutes already, and 25 other states are considering legislation at this time. What this bill does is kind of take a middle-of-the-road approach to the approach the other states are taking. So there's some states that are giving more leeway to employers. There are some states that are giving more leeway to employees. And, again, this is just kind of a middle-of-the-road approach. So going through the bill, replacing in 27.9.105 at the bottom of page 1, under discriminatory and unfair employment practices, we're including in that at the top of page 2, that it would be discriminatory or unfair if an employer or an employment agency required an employee or prospective employee to disclose a username, password, or other means for viewing and accessing the information contained on an employee or prospective employee's personal social media account. Starting on line 8, it defines what a social media account is. And beginning on line 13, it lists some exceptions to that, which would be on line 17. One exception would be a password to electronic devices and social media accounts that are owned by the employer. On lines 23 and 24, and on to the top of page 3, another exception is if items on the social media account are believed to be relevant in an investigation or allegation of employee misconduct or violation of any laws or regulations, and then it limits the use of that social media information to the investigation. And then the third exception is for conducting an investigation for compliance with requirements of state or federal statutes, rules and regulations, case law, or rules of a self-regulating organization. And I'm sorry, then one more exception is for law enforcement applications. And we currently can already do this for law enforcement applications. There's a lot of leeway for investigating people who are applying for those types of jobs. So with that, I'll stand with any questions.
Representative Greer. Representative Greer?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious. So would this affect existing contracts between an employer and an employee? And then we're talking about discrimination. Is this some sort of violation of a First Amendment right? What are we basing this on? Those two questions, if you could help me with.
Representative Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was kind of intrigued with where you started, a solution looking for a problem, and then the conversion to a supporter of this particular Senate file and articulating it quite clearly what's in it. But what made the difference on your switch from that? It wasn't that other states were doing it and we're trying to follow them or mix in the middle. What was it?
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know very little about employment law. My question is, when we start specifically delineating these kinds of actions on the part of the employer, I can think of all kinds of inappropriate things that an employer could ask for that no one should ask for. And my question is, what governs that? Because if we're trying to figure out what behaviors might be inappropriate, this is going to open up a big conversation, and we're going to need a lot of delineation.
I could take those questions so far so I don't get too lost. And,
yes, ma'am.
Okay, so as far as, you know, what governs what else, you know, what other kinds of inappropriate things that we would let employers do or legislate that employers do, this is really just allowing the Department of Employment to make rules regarding this. And if you look at the penalties for this, the penalties are really pretty minor penalties. It's like, well, we're going to tell you you can't do it. And I'm looking for the penalties right now. I mean, really, you know, if you fired someone for that reason, you might have to go back and rehire them. But really, the penalties are pretty minimum. It's just allowing the department to make rules. And then with regard to the chairman of minerals, which kind of ties into this, is that there actually are companies doing it. And it was funny because I got an email from a constituent who said, why are you bringing this? We ought to be able to, as employers, look into social media accounts for our employees because they could be putting out information that's, you know, confidential to our organization. But I think that's bending a little too far into an employee's private life. I mean, you could look at their, you know, their private emails. Could you look at their diaries at home? I mean, you know, this is just kind of drawing a line of you know, how far an employer can go into, investigating and snooping into an employee's personal life.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm in favor of this bill, but I have a question. So if on my social media site I post a picture of a train derailment, can the, let's say I work for a train company, then that company can ask for my password and look at my photos because maybe there was a rules violation involved, or they could, I'm kind of, don't know about this one.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this is actually designed to be more strict for the employers than it currently is, because currently we don't have anything that says an employer can't ask for that password. So right now the employer can ask for the password for any reason without any rules or repercussions for that. And so what we're doing is trying to put some side rails on that. And I would tend to, you know, agree with you that in some cases this may not go far enough, but it is, you know, it's at least starting to try to protect an employee's privacy.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question, because I'm somewhat concerned about this bill. Say an employer on one of these internet sites simply asked for a friend request. Does that go against this bill, where the employee could feel obligated to accept the friend request? Does that, how's this work?
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that's actually addressed in some of the statutes that other states have created, and we chose not to add that into this. But, you know, once again, you could go further, you could make it more strict, you could make it less strict. This was, again, just kind of a middle-of-the-road approach. So, you know, again, it's something we didn't address, but it's certainly something they could be doing now. And, again, we're just making one more step to try to make it a little more private for employees.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So how this is set up is that there are these internet social media places that you can go, and you can have an account on that social media. And I have two of them, but I don't ever check them, and I never write on them. But I have them. I have them. But I can go into my account, and I can take anybody's name on this floor, and I can search your name. And everything that you make public is public. But what you can't do as an employer is you can't ask for the personal messaging that you can do on that account. They can't ask for your personal email address and password. Now, if you have a company email, like we all do, and we all share our password so that IT can work on our computers, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about what people do in their private life from one person to another. Now, what they post online that goes out to everybody, or that I can search for online. I mean, have you ever Googled your own name? Oh, my goodness. If that's online, it's public information. It's there, and it's out for the public to read. And so that's not what this bill is addressing. What this bill is addressing is personal, the instant messaging through a social network, social media network, or through private email accounts. So that's what the bill is addressing, is the privacy, and it's a separation between work and home, private life.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few questions on the bill. I read this language, and it defines a social media account as an electronic service or account or electronic content, including but not limited to video still photographers, blogs, video blogs, podcasts, instant and text messages, email, online services or accounts or profiles or locations. What about an employer asking for a company email address for an employee who works for that company? It seems to be included in that definition. Also, I'm curious if the sponsors of the bill had thought about on page 3 in paragraph 17, it says there's an exception for law enforcement applications. What about healthcare workers, people who want to work in the military, who want to work in top secret or those kind of industries which require some of those clearances? Was that considered by the sponsor? With respect to employee misconduct, had the sponsors considered if you're a healthcare worker and you're posting patient information on the internet on blogs, that's employee misconduct. But if you can't monitor the employee's account, how does the employer know that that patient information is being disclosed to the whole entire universe on a billboard? Without having access to those kind of social media accounts as a condition of employment. And then it says in page 3, paragraph 4, that the social media is used solely for purposes of that investigation or a related proceeding. I'm wondering what "or a related proceeding" means.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So first, if I understood the speaker's first concern with these still photographs, blogs, and so forth with regard to an employee's, with regard to an employer's account, I think that's addressed on page 2 between lines 17 and 21, where it says that if the employer's social media account is used for the employer's business purposes, then the employer clearly has a right to that username and password and other means. In terms of monitoring the account for misconduct, this bill basically says we have to suspect you of misconduct before we're going to monitor. We're not going to monitor you assuming you have misconduct. We have to have a reasonable assumption that something's going wrong in order to be able to invade your privacy. And so we're going to give you the presumption of innocence. And I forgot the last question. Does anybody... There was a third. Oh, right. And there was discussion actually in the committee about expanding beyond law enforcement or even not including law enforcement. And again, this was sort of a middle of the road approach. We could have made it more strict. We could have made it more loose. But I would encourage you not to vote against it because you don't think it goes far enough. Although the speaker's point was actually going in the other direction, but.
Is there any more discussion? Representative Filer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought about this bill all last night since we've had it in our committee. And the one thing I'm worried about mostly with this is, the misconduct part of it where, an employer is allowed to get our private information if they consider what we've done misconduct in place of employment. But if they're allowed to get anything, as far as the list that's in here, including private emails and things like that. I'm trying to think of, of course, I'm in the new generation where we've had email most of my life, but what about prior to this? Was our employers allowed to check our personal mail at home if they thought we were doing something that was misconduct? This I get the bill. I totally get it. Because anything that, kind of restricts an employer from getting into our personal life, I like that. But to me, it seems like parts of this could allow our employers to get into a lot more of our personal life than what we want. So I would just throw out some caution before we vote on this.
Representative Petrov.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this was brought up because employers actually are asking for that information. An employee is kind of over the barrel if an employer asks for that information and they don't feel they have any recourse over being able to say no to their employer, that they might feel their job is being threatened, or if they want to get a job, that, this information is being requested. This is designed, this is designed to give more privacy, not less. And then one more comment that was one of the first questions asked about whether it pertains to existing contracts. I can't answer that question, but I will get an answer to that question.
Has everybody spoken on this and it would like to? Then can I hear the question? Question being called on the bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Senate File 81 has failed the Committee of the Whole. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. There's more than 14. Thank you.
You want to announce that it's failed. Senate File 82 has failed. Committee of the Whole. Next bill, Farkas. Oh, roll call. Never mind. Sorry.
Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Sorry.
Baker.
No.
Barlow. Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Blevins. Blevins.
No.
Blickery. Blickery. Brown.
No.
Burkhart. Burkhart. Bird.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
Yes.
Kennedy.
Yes.
Coleman.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Davison.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
No.
Filer.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Good.
Greer.
No.
Green.
Aye.
Halverson.
No.
Harshman. Harshman.
Excuse.
Harshman excused. Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings. Hutchings.
No.
Yagi.
No.
Kasparic.
No.
Kirkbride.
No.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
No.
Larson.
Aye.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
Mater. McKim.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz. Moniz.
Excuse.
Moniz excused. Nicholas.
Excuse.
Nicholas excused. Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
No.
Paxton.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Piperinen.
No.
Reeder.
No.
Simlick.
No.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
Excuse.
Stubson excused. Teeters.
No.
Throne. Throne excused. Walters.
No.
Watt.
Excuse.
Watt excused. Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
Blickery.
Excuse.
Blickery excused. Burkhart.
Excuse.
Burkhart excused. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Northrup, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 16 aye, 36 no, 8 excused.
Huh? Okay. Has Senate file 81 has failed committee of the whole. Next bill for our consideration. Whoa. Oh, no. You're introducing this bill, right? Yeah. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 82. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 82 from the Natural Resource Funding Committee, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act, providing for funding of large projects under that act, specifying large projects approved for funding in 2014, amending funding and timing for specified previously approved large projects, requiring specified conservation easements to include the state of Wyoming as a third-party beneficiary as specified, requiring certifications regarding kickbacks and gifts, providing appropriations, providing for reversion of funds, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 82-2014, large project funding, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 7 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 82 do pass, and I will explain the bill. Mr. Chairman, this is a funding scheme for the Wildlife Trust Fund in which all large projects have to be approved by this body. And a large project is defined as one costing $200,000 or more. And it has been the policy of the committee and the policy of this body that if there are a series of projects that on a particular a series of steps on a particular project that aggregate more than $200,000, that it be considered a $200,000 project. So this bill is the project funding for large projects for the Wildlife Trust Fund for this year. And as, Mr. Chairman, as we had previously predicted, the number of conservation easements that are funded by the Wildlife Trust Fund are decreasing. And in this bill, you will find 4 conservation easements. And the sections and the names, if you wish to look at them, are Section 901, Rim Ranch, Section 904, Wapiti Ridge, Section 906, Kronberg Ranch, and Section 911, Purple Sage. Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do, I think in the interest of time and trying to keep everyone's attention, is briefly go through the bill and name each of the projects, and especially the last one I want to talk about for a moment, and then I'll stand for any questions. So beginning, Mr. Chairman, on page 2 of the bill, we have Project 901, Rim Ranch Conservation Easement, which is a project to put permanent use restriction on approximately 3,945 acres in Sublette County to protect habitat and endangered species. Then on page 3 is Section 902, Yellowtail Fire Rehabilitation, which is a fire rehabilitation project to preclude loss of habitat for deer, amphibians, upland game birds, raptors, and other species. On page 5 is Section 903, Yellowstone Lake 2, which is a continuation of the project to remove lake trout and perpetuate native fish in Yellowstone Lake. On page 7 is Section 904, Wapiti Ridge Conservation Easement. This is an easement with the Wyoming Game and Fish Department, and it puts in place permanent use restrictions on approximately 2,080 acres for mule deer, elk, sage-grouse, antelope, and other species. Page 8 is the State Line, Section 905 State Line Pike, which is sponsored by a conservation district to put in permanent structures and irrigation improvements to preclude loss of habitat for Colorado River cutthroat trout and other aquatic species. Page 10, Section 906, is the Kronberg Ranch Conservation Easement, and that is, again, with the Stock Growers Agricultural Land Trust to permanently restrict use of approximately 6,640 acres for habitat for mule deer, antelope, songbirds, and other species. On page 12 is the Platte River Casper II project, in conjunction with the City of Casper, to restore and rehabilitate the Platte River Corridor, to restore habitats for fish in a blue ribbon fishery and restore streamside habitats and provide enhanced opportunity for associated with wildlife and natural resources. On page 14 is Table Mountain Water 2 with the Wyoming Game and Fish Department, which is to enhance aquatic habitats, maintain viral migration habitat for waterfowl, and irrigation efficiency for the landowners. On page 16 is the Wyoming Range Mule Deer Habitat Project to provide habitat enhancement for 400,000 acres in Sublette County for crucial habitat for mule deer and sage grouse, seasonal habitats for moose, elk, and other species, and to secure migration routes and crucial habitat. On page 18, Section 910 is the Harmony Diversion, again with the Wyoming Game and Fish Commission, to improve and restore river function in the Knowwood River to allow migration and passage of fish species in the river and improve irrigation efficiency. On page 19 is the Purple Sage Ranch Conservation Easement in Carbon County with the Stock Growers Agricultural Land Trust to provide permanent use restrictions on approximately 2,800 acres of land to preclude loss of habitat for mule deer, elk, antelope, songbirds, and other species, and maintain important river and wetland habitats. And finally, Mr. Chairman, on page 22 is the Bates Creek Watershed Project, and this is an enlargement. This is a project that's gone on for a long time that actually started over in Natrona County in Bates Hole and has now worked itself east all the way down the range into Converse County near Douglas, and it is primarily the restoration of aspen growth, which is a primary browsing source of winter feed for a number of species. So, Mr. Chairman, that is the length and the breadth of the bill, and I have numerous in-depth descriptions of each of these projects. If there are any questions, I found in the past that it was a waste of time to go through all those in detail, but I am happy to respond to any questions that anyone may have. And if there are no questions, Mr. Chairman, I call for the question on the bill.
Ahem.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question on the easements, the conservation easements, and the status of the mineral interests, or whether they're split estates or if they're not, or is there any, identify the purposes of all of these, but is there any specific prohibition on mineral development in these?
Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, those are handled in a number of different ways. If they're done correctly, the conservation easement can still accommodate oil and gas exploration. It can accommodate about every kind of mineral development except surface mining. And surface mining, because of some quirks in the law, surface mining cannot be carried on without the consent of the surface owner. And in these conservation easements, the surface owner agrees that in perpetuity he will object and not permit surface mining. But there is a lot of oil and gas drilling that goes on within these conservation easements, and that has become much more acceptable with directional drilling, where they can put in a pad and drill directionally perhaps a mile each way from a pad so that there can be a lot of oil and gas development without very much surface disturbance.
There any more discussion? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 82 and ask for your favorable consideration. On page 5 of the bill, you'll see the Yellowstone Lake 2 project. The issue here is whether Wyoming will donate $622,000 to a federal program on federal property for a program based in the state to the north. This program to eradicate wild trout brought to Yellowstone by the federal government 120 years ago, documented, is an obsession to eradicate so-called wild trout by netting, poisoning, electroshocking, and catch-and-kill regulations. Nearly half of the waters that are now encompassed by Yellowstone, the park up with the stones that are yellow, were originally barren. Over 120 years ago, the federal government set out to create a sport fishery by introducing game fish species to these waters in the form of lake, brook, brown, rainbow, and cutthroat trout. Until recently, Yellowstone National Park managed its waters with wild trout in mind, namely Yellowstone cutthroat trout, lake brown, rainbow, and brook trout. Lake trout management in Yellowstone Lake has become a controversial issue. The Yellowstone Park Service, bolstered by certain scientists under its jurisdiction, is blaming the lake trout for the decline of Yellowstone cutthroats. I am not denying that cutthroats suffer some predations by lake trout, but empirical evidence would prove it to have minimal impact. Many anglers will confirm that the park science here is illogical. Lake trout and Yellowstone cutthroat occupy radically different places in the water column, and their habits rarely coincide. As a counterpoint, 40 miles away, in another national park with big mountains, the Park Service manages a lake named after a town as a trophy lake trout fishery, even going so far as to close the season for lake trout during their spawn. Cutthroats subsist in this lake too, bearing witness to the fact that even a water body managed to increase lake trout size and numbers can maintain a healthy population of cutthroats. The fact that fish numbers in this lake named after the town seem unaffected should be proof enough of the absurdity of the Yellowstone Lake management plan.
Please support the amendment, vote aye, and delete this project from the large projects bill. Thank you.
Chairman Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, neither the sponsor of this amendment nor I would qualify as a fisheries biologist, and so I think we're at a loss for expert testimony or facts in this matter. I think there are great concerns in our state about the predation by these lake trout on the Yellowstone cutthroat, great concerns about the diminution of the Yellowstone cutthroat population in the lake and in its tributaries and the effect that that has on grizzly bears. And it's interesting the way that presentation was presented, because when we're putting out this money to get rid of the lake trout, it's in another state, but when we're doing tourism, it's in our state. So I think we all have a stake in this river or drainage system and in this lake, and I would urge you to vote against the amendment. And if we need to have a scientific review of this to determine which of the contentions is correct, then that is something we could do, but it wouldn't be appropriate to do with an amendment. So I would urge you to vote no on the amendment.
Representative Summers on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, on the amendment, one thing I just want everybody to recognize is that there is a board that reviews all these projects and they take testimony. These are vetted over the course of a great period of time. And, you know, I have a lot of faith in that board doing the right thing, so I stand against the amendment.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not an expert. I got discouraged, as a matter of fact, but I do kind of challenge the statement. I might get a smile here about this being barren of wildlife, but in particular of fisheries in the Rocky Mountain West. Matter of fact, part of it goes that the technical name was Salmo, and Salmo Clarkei Lewis. I was one of the first one, and then Clarkei. And I think there are four principal cutthroat trouts that were found during the Lewis and Clark expedition. I got discouraged because they changed the name from Salmo to Ocorincus, and when they did that, I kind of gave up. There's, I think, now seven or eight different varieties that probably were in existence when this barren land didn't have any fish in it. So I think maybe we ought to think a little bit deeper and a little bit longer in our history of what was really here and what we're trying to preserve and what we're trying to do.
Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we came down the session, a few of us got together with some outfitters and they talked to us about this issue. They said that at that time when they were in high school, which is about the same time I was in high school, that they would go up and go to the little tributaries around the big lake in the park and go look at the fish, and the cutthroats would spawn so much that it just looked like a boiling mass going up through there. And, of course, that was been somewhere in the early 80s. And then after that time, they would go up in the middle 90s, and it would be less and less fish. And now, of course, they said you're hard-pressed to see some of these fish going up the particular tributaries, and it's become evident that the big fish in the pond are eating up the little fish as they naturally do, and so I'm on and against this amendment.
Representative Laux.
Mr. Speaker, I would like some clarification on this. I just, from a previous speaker, is it true that in 915-903 that we will be sending money to the state in the north to help bolster their economy with their fishery projects?
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment, it was mentioned by the bringer of this amendment, this is a federal project, and I would say it's exactly the opposite of that. It's a state project, the state of Wyoming project. And we have been funding this. We've been funding these efforts to eliminate the lake trout in the park. And it's been successful, and it's been working. And, in fact, the committee that looked at this bill said it has been working. We're going to provide more resources for it. And it's not only about the lake trout within the park, but, of course, all the way into Wyoming. And not just the fish, but the entire ecosystem. We're dealing with bears and other animals throughout the entire ecosystem that are affected by the cutthroat population. And in my district, right down the heart of from the park into my district, is a wonderful cutthroat area. It's world-class cutthroat area. And this is a type of project that we need to be funding. This is a type of project that the science is proven on. And I would urge a resoundingly no vote on this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment, the testimony we heard in appropriations was that the grant money is for a study. It's not to put fish in the lake. It's not to take fish out of the lake. It's for study on what to do about the problem. We have, in a way, another sage-grouse issue. If the lake trout decimate the cutthroat to the point that they're listed as threatened or endangered, things change tremendously for this, that whole corner of the state, both for the development, for tourism, for a number of things. And it was explained to us that this money is purely to help fund the studies, not to take fish out, not to add fish in or anything else. It's study money. And that good representative from here in Cheyenne asked a question. He said, well, these lake trout that they net and bring out, what do they do with them? And I could see the look on his face, which was, you know, he would take them to eat them. But they kill them and put them back in the lake to restock the biomass in the lake to give other things to eat. So, you know, this has nothing to do with any of that. It's only to study the issue. Thank you. On and against the amendment.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to see a resounding aye on this particular amendment. I don't know why we're giving the federal government money to help them do things they should be doing on their own in the park. I mean, they control the printing press. They can flip out a few more billion here and there to pay for this stuff. What in the world are we doing using this money that could so well be used elsewhere in Wyoming, up in that park?
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also am against this amendment. I'm one of the guys that used to go up there every summer in the head of the Yellowstone, and the cutthroat trout were there in mass amounts. So to say that this doesn't have anything to do with, you know, the killing of the lake trout, it might not, but studying where they spawn, the best ways to get a handle on what's really going out with the lake trout, I think this is what it's about. There are no, as one of the previous representative said, there just about are no. Last time I was up Yellowstone, we made a 5-day trip, went up around where we used to have fish. You just about walk across on the right place on their backs. There just aren't any fish there. And what's the cause of this is what this money is getting to. And one of the comments that was made, lake trout are deep trout, and they're eating plankton. Well, I do a lot of lake trout fishing. I've got a 30-pounder on my wall, and we pulled them out with pound fish inside them at 100 feet deep. So I'm not sure we're eating a lot of plankton when I'm pulling fish that I'd like to catch in a stream out of their mouth. So I think we do have some merit in looking at this. This is a problem that really affects Wyoming.
Chairman Harvey.
Out of my league here, but I just find it very ironic that the federal government reintroduces one species, well, actually, this species, 100 years ago, and now they want us to manage it. We have to pay for it. We have to fix their mistake. Now we're introducing another species, and it's come to the point that they've become predators all over the state, and we're fixing that problem for them too. And then we have the bears, and we're paying money out of our general fund to fix their mistake too. It just seems like My goodness, we just continue to pay for their mistakes over and over and over. When do we treat them like a child and make them take accountability for their actions on their land?
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is actually in my district. The lake is actually in my district. And some of my friends are for this thing, and some of my friends back home are against this thing, and right now I'm for my friends. The question I have, though, just I think we needed some clarification. When I met with these folks, they told me that what they were going to use the money for was to map where the lake trout are essentially laying down their eggs, and then they were going to come in and either use a chemical or electroshock that area of the lake and eradicate them. They've been trying the gill netting for years, and that hasn't worked as effectively as this new program they're hoping to do. So I just needed some clarification, because there was a comment earlier that this was just for a study, but I think it's more than just the study. It was to study to find where they're at, and then once they find them, they were going to eradicate them. So I just wanted some clarification, and I wasn't in the Appropriations Committee meeting, but was it just a study to see if they wanted to proceed, or once they find them, it was my assumption they were going to proceed. And the bill actually says, project purpose, removal of non-native fishes from a natural native fish area. So I just wanted that clarification, because I think there was some confusion just now on someone made the statement that it was just a study.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to point out to the body that this is not a fully estate program. This is a cooperation between the federal government and fishing organizations. And for every dollar that we put in, there's another $2 that is going in from other sources. If we don't become part of the coalition, then we lose that leverage.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, the federal government would love nothing more than for us to cede all responsibility for Wyoming wildlife in the state of Wyoming, where it's on federal ground, to the feds. So I urge you to resist this, not only in the park, but I mentioned it in another statement, that the federal government is trying to take over wildlife in areas of the state of Wyoming, and we need to just reassert the fact that we have control and some of it's our responsibility. And I urge you to resist the amendment.
Representative Reeder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. Is there a limit on how many lake trout you can catch? I mean, is it a catch and release, or could we raise a limit on how many we could catch?
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I'm pretty sure that not only is there a limit, but I think it's against the law to throw one, a live one, back in the lake.
Any further discussion? Oh. Go ahead.
And, Mr. Chairman, just one more thing. This business about the federal government and the state government and who's throwing in what. Let's not forget we're talking about an entire ecosystem here, not just Yellowstone Park, not just the lake. We're talking about that park, the other park, the wilderness areas that surround it, everything that feeds into it. And it's a huge ecosystem, a good part of which is in the one representative's county in the middle of the state. And so for the state of Wyoming to throw in some of the funding in conjunction with the federal government doesn't seem offensive, I don't think, to any of us, when it's a shared project. And we're taking part of the responsibility. The entire ecosystem is not in the park, and the entire ecosystem is not under the control of the federal government. And I guess if we wanted it that way, then the federal government would be setting all the hunting seasons and the harvest quotas and all that sort of thing, which I don't think any of us has any appetite for. So it's state funding, It's federal funding. There's efforts from a lot of different sources trying to take care of an ecosystem that falls under a number of varied jurisdictions.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Leader, for leading into my final comment. It is about the ecosystem. It is about watersheds being poisoned, often repeatedly, with toxic chemicals, not just all trout, but small fish, mayflies, Cape amphibians, other aquatic species, which form the direct and indirect food base for many birds, mammals, and other organisms, are being killed off with this misguided eradication program. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick look on the fishing regs in Yellowstone. You can get a fishing permit for $40 for the year. You still need it, apparently, for lake trout. I don't know why. But it does say the limit on lake trout has been eliminated. And you are required to not put it back. You have to kill the fish.
Question being called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 82, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 82 has failed. The Committee of the Whole back on the bill. Representative Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of our good colleagues at the diagonal mic up here mentioned that these projects are joint ventures among several groups. I want to point out something that we dealt with in the last session was another package of projects similar to this. Here we go again with the conservation easements. I'll direct your attention to the ones described on pages 3, 7, 10, and 19 of this package. Conservation easements there, Wyoming's taxpayer contribution to those projects comes up, just doing the math in my simple country head, $1.5 million taxpayer dollars to do a conservation easement. To quote one of our other former colleagues, we've got to think this over. Is this the proper use of the taxpayer's dollar? Thank you.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the past, we've had a spreadsheet that listed the project, the sponsor, the state money, the federal money, and whatever else was on there. I talked to one of the folks that are associated with that. They're going to try to get that for us tomorrow as a handout. I think that would be advantageous to us all to see. So hopefully we can get that to help explain these a little bit. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 82 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
Senate File 82 has passed Committee of the Whole. Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion carries.
Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report. The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. Senate File 18, recommended do pass. Senate File 19, recommended do pass. Senate File 20, recommended do pass. Senate File 75, amended, recommended do pass. Senate Joint Resolution number 1, recommended do pass. Senate File 45, recommended do pass. Senate File 84, recommended do pass. Senate File 13, recommended do pass. Senate File 55, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 92, recommended do pass. Senate File 6, recommended do pass. Senate File 7, recommended do pass. Senate File 34, recommended do pass. Senate File 42, recommended do pass. Senate File 56, recommended do pass. Senate File 64, amended. Representative Baker announced a conflict of interest on file number 64, recommended do pass. Senate File 81, the bill was indefinitely postponed. Senate File 82, recommended do pass, signed by Representative Filer, Chairman.
Representative Filer.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Filer. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. We're at that order of business of messages from the Senate.
Message number 192, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 2, Bonded Indebtedness Mill Levy Supplement, ayes 30, no 0, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 193, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 4, Pest Control Compact, ayes 30, no 0, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 10, Water Well Permits. The House bill listed above passed on third reading, ayes 30, no 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments, signed by Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 195, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 40, State Employees and Officials Group Insurance Membership, ayes 29, noes 1, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 196, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 83, Insurance Coverage of Inherited Enzymatic Disorders, ayes 18, noes 12, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 197, the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 41, Emergency Medical Technician Pension Plan, ayes 11, noes 17, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Madam Minority Caucus Leader.
Mr. Speaker, approval to the floor.
Certainly.
The body, I would like to introduce two people in the North Gallery, Oscar Yildiz and Ismail Guder, who are sponsoring tonight's fourth annual legislative dinner for the Multicultural Mosaic Foundation. If they could please stand.
Yay.
Hey.
Welcome
Thank
to the House,
so
our good friends. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor?
Certainly.
Members of the body, the Wyoming Military Department and the Wyoming Veterans Commission will be hosting a meet and greet tomorrow morning between 8:30 and 9:45 in the Capitol Rotunda. The meet and greet will also include the Army National Guard 67th Army Band. Also, over the noon recess, ladies and gentlemen, up in room 302, they will have the Wyoming Fallen Warrior kiosk program, and this program features photos, videos, stories, and information about each of the more than 75 fallen warriors who have died since 9/11, and we invite you to attend either or both of those tomorrow.
Representative Larson, privilege to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We'd just like to remind the body of their legislative prayer breakfast, which is a tradition which has been started 20 years ago. The prayers and presentations are non-denominational, and we even welcome senators. Staff, guests, and others are invited. Tomorrow's presentation will be by Dr. Sloan Hales, 6:30 in the a.m. at the Agin Eye. All are welcome.
That order of business and committee announcements. Chairman Gingery. Representative Crone, did you have a privilege of the floor?
I did, Mr. Speaker. Just briefly, in celebration of Colonel William F. Buffalo Bill Cody's 168th birthday, the Buffalo Bill Center for the West is hosting a reception tonight at the Little America. It's also a program that supports museums across the country. So I was asked to invite all legislators to attend 6 to 8 at the Teton Room at Little America. Thank you.
Representative Escobar.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. Wanted to remind the body that tomorrow is the Day of Hope, and it is going to be a little different than we've had in the past for the Day of Hope. We're not giving up on hope, but we'll have some introductions, and if there's a particular cancer you are supportive of, you might want to wear that lapel pin. And then also, if you are a fan of trains, I got a calendar for Burlington Northern here, the other railroad, and maybe you got some grandchildren that like trains or something like that, but if one of you would like it, just come see me.
Madam Minority Caucus Leader, privilege of the floor.
No, Mr. Speaker, I have a committee announcement.
Okay. All right, we're at that order of business of committee announcements. It's only on the day that that I have a bill up over in the Senate that we have 6,000 privileges of the floor and 42 privileges. Madam Minority Caucus Leader, committee announcement.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number four, Education, will be meeting immediately upon adjournment in room 302, where we'll take up four bills. The first, Senate File 106, State Education Administration. Next, Senate File 3, School Facilities Collaborative Committee Process. Senate File 4, School Finance Local Resources, and Senate File 5, Teachers National Certification Pay Incentive.
Chairman Gingery.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. We will take up Senate File 30 and Gross, Compensation for Persons Exonerated Based on DNA Evidence, Senate File 10, Work Release Act Repeal, and then at lunchtime at noon, we will take up Senate File 117, Summary Probate Proceedings, Senate File 116, Expungement of Felonies.
Chairman Horstman.
45 minutes. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet tomorrow, Thursday, February 27th, to hear the following two bills at 9 a.m., Senate File 14, Engrossed, Court Security Funding, Senate File 100, Engrossed, Business Ready Community Program Modifications. And, Mr. Speaker, your Joint Conference Committee on the Budget has worked through many of the non-money items, language differences on the budget bill, and we are now continuing that work into the evening with the goal to finish tonight. If not, we will resume tomorrow morning on House Bill 1.
Madam Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow, Thursday, upon noon recess. We will hear Senate Files 17, 24, 25, 107, and 91.
Chairman Simlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Recesses, will meet tomorrow morning, Thursday, February 27th at 8 a.m. in room H11. To hear Senate File 115, Warrantless Searches, Repeal, and Senate File 31, Engrossed 24/7 Sobriety Program.
Chairman Swanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment tomorrow in room H17 to hear Senate File 86, Obstructing Roads and Highways, and Senate File 101, License Plate Vehicle Indicators. And members of the committee, if you want to see what the license plates are going to be like, they are on my desk. Come look at them.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet in about 5 minutes in room H17 to hear Senate File 89, Engrossed, Health Professionals Medicaid Billing.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until tomorrow, February 27, 2014, at 10 o'clock a.m.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House is adjourned until tomorrow, February 27, 2014 at 10 a.m.